Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
And now here is your guide to these adventures of mine.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Fibber and Molly. This episode of Fibber and Molly comes from December 4th, 1945. The episode is entitled Winter Walk to Dugan's Lake. And after that is My Favorite Husband from November 25th, 1950. The episode is entitled Liz's Birthday. And strangely enough, we have Our Miss Brooks from November 19th, 1950, and the episode is entitled Thanksgiving Turkey. I know it's kind of off for the time of year. As of this recording, this is February 1st, 2021, as I record this. So it doesn't quite fit, but I can't help it because they started back in September when Fibber and Molly hadn't come on until October. So the episodes are skewed off. So I apologize for that. But anyway, and The Halls of Ivy from January 23rd, 1952. The episode is entitled Medal of Honor, and this is one of the most moving, well-written, and very serious episodes of The Halls of Ivy. And it was highly proclaimed at the time, and I think they even repeated it once or twice. And I know that there are certain groups that wanted copies of this particular episode of The Halls of Ivy. And then after that is You Bet Your Life, and the secret word is foot. So enjoy all these, and I'll see you all back here next week. And by the way, remind me to let you know that last week was a horrendous time for me. I was out of power for 3.5 days due to a storm, which is now hitting the East Coast as we speak on February 1st. And it's not going to look good for them because I know what it was like for us out here in California. So it's not going to be pleasant for them. And let's hope everyone back there buckles down and goes out and gets a lot of flashlights and stuff because you're going to need it. And maybe an extra blanket or two, because it's going to be cold, colder than it was here. So anyway, everyone buckle down and stay safe. And, yeah, it's going to be horrendous. So let's kind of hope for these people out in the East Coast that it's all going to work out for them, okay? All right, thanks.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. We'll be right back. makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Bring a little springtime into your kitchen with Johnson's Glow Coat. Yes, sir, Glow Coat will make your linoleum floors so bright and cheerful and downright beautiful that you'll think of the sunny days of April and May. And Glow Coat will do that little job almost by itself because it's so easy to use. There's no rubbing or buffing with self-polishing Glow Coat. You simply apply and let dry. And in 20 minutes, your floors gleam with a beautiful, tough, long-lasting polish. Glow Coat protects linoleum and other floor surfaces against wear, dirt, and moisture. It actually adds greatly to their life. If you haven't yet tried Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat, get a package this week. Notice how smoothly and evenly it dries, without any streaking. You'll be delighted with its uniform high quality, and you'll understand why millions of women everywhere give first choice to Glow Coat. Winter is a wonderful time of the year, if you care for that sort of thing. Some people like to stay home by the fire. Others like to go out and skate for hours on end. They don't even care which end. And here at 79 Wistful Vista are two of our favorite winter sports, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Don't get so close to the fireplace, dearie, you'll fall in.
Think I ought to put on another log on?
No, I don't. You've got it so hot in here now, the doorknobs are turning brown.
Yeah. Maybe it is a little warm at that. I'll open the window a second. Get a load of that ooze on.
Put that window down, please.
Oh, boy, that air is wonderful out there.
Well, leave it out there. Don't bring it in here.
This is the kind of a night for a long walk, you know it. I'd like to get into my mucklucks, wrap a muffler around my neck, and hike out to Dugan's Lake and back.
Well, include me as the saying goes out. I'm very happy right here, with my glass of root beer, my new murder mystery, and my pan full of popcorn, if you'll pardon the vulgar expression.
Yeah, but gee,
yeah, you hitch up the dog sled and carry the serum to Alaska. Mommy stays home. Go on, mush.
Yeah. Shucks, we may not have another night like this all winter. Clear, sharp, and beautiful. Makes your blood tingle.
I can get the same effect by sitting on my foot for 20 minutes.
Oh, gee whiz, I don't want to go alone. I just thought
you were just bluffing, dearie. I know you. You wouldn't stir away from this fireplace tonight if it was snowing $10 bills.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll show you who's bluffing, Tootsie. By George, I'm going to get into my coat and walk clear out to Dugan's Lake and back. That's where I'm going to walk clear out to and back.
Your mittens are on the hall table.
Huh? Oh, okay. Well, here I go. I'm going now.
Hello, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, hi, Alice.
Hello, Alice, dear.
Creatures, you both look comfortable and happy sitting by this wonderful fire.
Well, himself here thinks it's very exhilarating weather, Alice. He's even thinking of taking a long walk.
Out to Dugan's Lake and back, Alice.
Are you kidding, Mr. McGee? Why, it's colder than the keel of a kayak.
Bah, just a tang in the air, that's all. Look, what do you say we all go? We can throw snowballs on the way and build a snowman. Dive into snowdrifts. Have fun. Come on, let's go.
Have some popcorn, Alice?
Yes, thank you. What are you reading, Mrs. McGee?
Oh, it's a new crime club book, Alice. The Man Who Asked Why.
Oh.
Oh, it's wonderful. I've read page 39 four times, thanks to my little lover of the great outdoors here.
Okay, sissies, okay, I'll go along then. You two panty waists can stay here and make like a couple of hothouse petunias.
Oh, well, I couldn't go anyway, Mr. McGee. Bud's calling for me in half an hour. We're going to a movie.
Oh, who's Bud, dear?
Bud is the floor walker in my department at the Bon Ton, who always wears a carnation in his buttonhole's cousin.
I see. Well, you'll have to sit if you don't get started pretty soon, because all the theaters are pretty crowded these days in the balcony.
You and Bud will be perfectly welcome to stay here by the fire, Alice. There's plenty more popcorn and apples and marshmallows.
Oh, gee, thanks, Mrs. McGee. Maybe I will ask Bud to stay here this evening. We could sit by the fire and... Oh, look at Mr. McGee. You look like you were going to the North Pole, Mr. McGee.
Enjoy yourself, dearie.
Oh, I will, believe me. A few miles in this bracing air and I'll...
I'll get it.
Wait till I take this overcoat off.
You don't have to take your coat off to answer the phone.
Well, maybe somebody wants me to stay home for something or other. Hello? Who? Oh, yeah, she's right here. It's for you, Ella.
Oh, thanks, Mr. McGee. Hello? Yes, this is Alice. What? No, that wasn't my father. That was the house that I rent a room in's owner. Yes. Well, look, Bud, how about if we stay right here tonight? The fireplace is... What? Fine. Goodbye, Bud. He says I talked him into it.
Well, get going, McGee. Here's your coat and mittens.
Huh? Oh, well, okay. Well... So long.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, here I go. McGee, anybody home?
Oh, my gosh, old Doc Gamble. Come on in, Doc. Take off your things. Here, Molly, take my coat. I can't go out now. Yeah, we got company. Ah, good old Doc. Come on right in, Doc. Set a spell. I want you.
Well, this has all been very nice, but I don't want to upset any of your plans. I see little Bucklewart here is all dressed up to go out.
Ah, forget it, Doc. Stick around. I'm just going out for a little stroll is all. Nothing important.
A little stroll? In this blizzard? Why, your ears would drop off before you got to the corner.
Hmm?
Not that that wouldn't be a facial improvement.
Yeah? He says he's going to walk out to Dugan's Lake and back, Doctor.
Creepers, that's quite a hike. I rode out there once on the back of a fellow I knew at the airplane plant named Ozzie Simpson's motorcycle. And was it ever rugged? Oh, you said it.
Oh, sure. You're all making a lot of fuss about a little walk in the crisp winter air. I like winter walking. I feel marvelous with the wind in my face, head up, chest out, swinging my arms with the frosty stars twinkling down.
Oh, stop it, you little double-malted extrovert. Well, you hate winter weather as much as I do. Any time I deliberately walk into a gale, it'll be Gail Patrick. Where are you going, Alice?
Well, I've got to go up and fix my hair, Doctor. My boyfriend is coming over. Have a nice walk, Mr. McGee.
Thanks, kid. I will.
Take off your things, boys, and relax. I guess McGee's in for the night.
Why, of course he is. Ain't a fit night out for man nor beast. Not that McGee could be classified as either one.
I never heard such a lot of silly nonsense about a little walk in the fresh air.
Okay, go ahead, deep freeze. We'll give you 10 minutes start, and then we'll send out the St. Bernards. What a switch that is. The dog's going to you.
I can take it. I got Indian blood in me. I'm 1/16 Potawatomi.
You know, I think he really is, Doctor.
Betcha.
At least he dances much better alone than he does with me.
Well, if he's 1/16 Indian, my mummy was an Egyptian. What does it prove, anyway? That's for me.
How do you know, Doctor?
Anytime the weather gets below zero and I'm chatting comfortably in a warm home with friends and the phone rings, it's for me. Somebody's child has just swallowed a toy soldier, and I've got to go and demobilize him.
Well, what'd you expect? Did you take up medicine so he could sit in your big fat office all the...
I'll get it. 79 Wistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Who? Yes, he's right here. For you, Doctor.
It is? Thank you. Gamble speaking. Yes. Well, yes, I... The bishop. Great Scott. Don't move him till I get there. Yes, I'll hurry. Hand me my coat and hat, McGee, quick. See you later, folks.
Oh, my gosh, something serious, Doctor?
Yes, when I left the hospital, I was in the middle of a chess game with one of the interns, and if he moves that bishop, I'm checkmated. Good night.
Well, better put your hat and coat away, dearie. I knew you wouldn't really go for a walk tonight.
No, you did you? You think that big fat pill pusher talked me out of it, did you? No, sir, he just got my back up. That's just what he got up. Hand me my mittens again.
Here.
Hey, wait a minute. You don't think I ought to stay till Alice's boyfriend gets here?
Oh, no, no, no. You run along, or I'll begin to suspect you of deliberately stalling.
Why, Molly, how could you think such a thing? Much less say it. Why, I've been just waiting for a night like this, with the lacy branches of the trees glittering with ice.
Oh, my.
With the clean, fresh air blowing through these mittens. I've got a hole in them, did you know it?
I'll mend them when you get back, sweetheart. Have a nice walk.
Huh? Oh, I sure will. Well, so long.
Hello there. Anybody home?
Oh, well, hi, Junior. Come on in. Hey, Molly, here's Wilcox. Cold out there.
Ah, yeah. Say, I don't want to break up anything, Mac, if you were going out. Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox. Take off your coat and sit over here by the fire.
You're not interfering with a thing, Junior. Mighty glad to see you. I was merely going out for a little walk.
Out to Dugan's Lake and back.
Dugan's Lake? Why, there are 10-foot snowdrifts between here and Dugan's Lake. They wouldn't find your body till spring. Why, it's so cold out, General Grant's statue is flapping his arms.
Please, Junior, you know I don't like to hear people exaggerate. Anyway, cold weather don't frighten me. I was a fur trapper up north of Winnipeg for several years, you know that. And that's where they make the weather. I'll never forget one time. Here, let's take our coats off and be comfortable, Junior, huh?
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. I'll never forget the time I was running my trap line and I smacked into a blizzard 32 miles from my cabin.
Gee, was it cold?
Was it cold? Junior, it was so cold the teeth in my pocket comb were chattering. The smoke from my campfire froze solid before it got 5 feet in the air. Just kind of congealed and fell over on the ground. And that's what saved my life.
Tell us about it, McGee, as if anybody could stop you.
Well, sure. Quick's the flash. I piled peat on the campfire.
Peat? That's a kind of an inflammable turf, isn't it?
Yeah, but I was referring to Pete Umguk, an Eskimo that was working with me that season. I threw peat on the fire because he was wearing a sheepskin coat that would make a big smoke, you see. Well, sir, fast as the smoke froze and fell down, I'd grab it and start piling it up. Do you ever handle any frozen smoke?
No, but we've heard a lot of hot air that was pretty solid.
Well, sir, frozen smoke is kind of like putty. Quite pleasant to work with. And in 15 minutes, I'd build us a little igloo out of that frozen smoke that Pete and I lived in for 10 days. And that darn near cost us our lives.
Why, pal? Did you inhale part of the ceiling?
No, but me and Pete was playing a game of Red Dog when the thaw come. And all of a sudden, there we was, strangling and gasping and coughing. Yes. That frozen smoke had melted and was choking us to death. Holding my breath, I grabs Pete and hauls him out into the open air. Then I rushes back into that cloud of smoke.
Oh, dear. What on earth for, dearie?
I'd left my cigarette burning. Dangerous thing to do in the woods. Well, sir, that little experience taught me a valuable lesson, Junior.
It did, eh?
Yes, sir. From that day on, I never played another game of Red Dog with an Eskimo.
Well, if you should trap a few seals on your way to Dugan's Lake tonight, dearie, Mother could use a nice new coat, you know.
Hey, are you serious about taking a walk tonight, Mac?
I've never been seriouser in my life, Junior. There's nothing better for the inside of a man than the outside of a house, I always say. Remember, all our famous men have been great walkers.
Oh, I don't know, dearie. You know, Christopher Columbus rode a boat. Paul Revere rode a horse. And Fred Allen rides Jack Benny.
Yes, and don't forget that for a while, walking met a great deal of opposition, too.
What do you mean, opposition? Whom from?
housewife.
Uh-oh.
Oh, how do you like that? I ran into that with my big fat eyes wide open. Why can't I ever...
Well, what I mean is, housewives used to complain about people walking over their kitchen linoleum, tracking it up with mud and snow and rain. But that was before they discovered Johnson's self-polishing glow coat.
You're not whistling Dixie, Mr. Wilcox.
Yes, you know that housewives now, they know that spilled things and foot tracks can be so easily and quickly wiped off a Johnson glow coated linoleum. Why, now they welcome the milkman on a muddy day.
Yeah, they do if he's got any butter, anyway. Otherwise,
in fact, you know, glow coat is one of the great labor-saving devices of the 20th century. No rubbing, no buffing. Just spread it around and let it dry. No fuss, no fume, no fret, no more popcorn.
No. Now, McGee just ate the last handful, Mr. Wilcox. Can you wait till I pop some more?
No, thank you. I've got to get along home. My wife promised me we were going to have Crab Louie for dinner tonight.
Oh, well, trot along, Waxy. Don't keep him waiting.
Keep who waiting?
This Crab Louie, whoever he is.
Oh, okay, pal. Good night, Molly.
Good night, Mr. Wilcox.
Roach cold.
And now for your information, dearie. Crab Louie is a kind of a salad.
How do you know? You ever meet him?
Not a him. It's a dish made of crab meat.
Oh, I see. Did he invent it?
Who?
This guy, Louie.
Louie who?
Who? Search me. I never met him. He's a friend of Wilcox's.
Well, we'll ask them to bring him over some night.
Sure. What do we care if he's a crab? We'll jolly him up a bit. Well, I suppose I better be making some more popcorn.
No, dearie, I'll make the popcorn. You go on and take your walk. That is, if you weren't just kidding about it all this time.
What do you mean, kidding? When I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Come anything or high water. Where's my overshoes? Ah, here they are.
Are you really going, McGee?
You betcha. And save a little popcorn for me. I won't be gone more than 3 or 4 hours. Nothing like a brisk hike in the winter air to give a guy an appetite. Well, so long now.
Goodbye, Pet.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. I was just about to ring the doorbell.
Oh, well, look who's here. Hi, Carsty. I'm glad to see you. Come in. Hey, Molly, look who's here. It's old lady, it's Mrs. Carstairs.
Do come in, Mrs. Carstairs. Shut that door, McGee, from either side.
Carsty, you'll never know how glad I am to see you. Shake hands and pardon my mittens.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. Goodness, that fire feels good, Mrs. McGee. If I may quote my husband, I'm colder than a well digger's memories. But am I detaining you, Mr. McGee? I see you're dressed to go out.
Oh, no, nothing important, Carsty. Just going out for a little stroll.
Yes, out to Dugan's Lake and back.
Really? At 12 below zero? If you have a grudge against your insurance company, Mr. McGee, wouldn't it be simpler just to stand up in the bathtub and stick your wet finger into a light socket?
I guess you underestimate me as an outdoors man, Carsty. Did you know I was a fur trapper for several years up in the Saskatchewan country?
Oh, dear.
I'll never forget. One day I got caught in a terrific blizzard 32 miles from my cabin.
Good heavens, Mr. McGee. Was it cold?
Was it cold? My cow gave ice cream for 2 weeks.
Amazing.
Yes, it seems an utter impossibility.
Anyway, Carsty, here I was, caught in this terrific blizzard. Even the smoke from my campfire froze before it got 5 feet into the air. Just kind of congealed and fell to the ground. And that's what saved my life. Cause quick's the flash. I piled peat on the fire, and when I got him going...
The King's Men sing Yatata Yatata.
When I put my arm around you, and we're going for a walk, must you yet-a-day, talk. When we're sitting close together in a cozy taxi cab, must...
Yes, sir. And that little experience taught me a valuable lesson, Carsty.
Did it indeed, Mr. McGee?
Yes, sir. From that day on, I never played Red Dog with an Eskimo.
Wasn't that an interesting experience, Mrs. Carstairs?
It really was, my dear. And while it might seem incredible to some, I happen to know it's true.
You do?
Yes. You see, Mr. Carstairs and I were motoring through Maine one winter en route to our hunting lodge. Oh. My husband goes up there every year to shoot moose.
And what happened, Mrs. Carstairs?
We had a blowout just as we encountered a blizzard. But my husband leaped out of the car, lit a cigar, and started blowing smoke rings, which froze almost instantly, of course.
Oh, well, Nat.
Finally, he blew one the exact size of our tires, mounted it on the rim, and we reached our hunting lodge in the nick of time.
What did you do when it melted, Millicent?
Oh, we're still using it, my dear. Yes, it's quite amusing how that tire has baffled our ration board. And do you know, every cold winter day since that time, my husband has smoked rough-cut tobacco.
What for, Carsby?
He's trying to blow a smoke ring with a tread on it. Well, this has all been very entertaining, but I simply must go. Good evening.
Good night, Mrs. Carstairs.
Good night, Millicent. Did you ever hear such a line of malarkey in all your born days? Who does she think she's kidding with that smoke ring stuff? Frozen smoke ring.
Why, that's impossible.
You know how some people exaggerate, dearie.
Yeah.
And you better get out of that overcoat. It's too late to go for a walk now.
Too late for who? I ain't afraid of the dark. I said I was going to walk to Dugan's Lake and back, and by George, I'm going to do it. And right now, too. Where's my mittens? Oh, here they are. Well, so long.
Bless his brave little heart. He hates walking like a jockey and snow like the Miami Chamber of Commerce. But he'll trudge out to Dugan's Lake like a little man.
Hey, Molly, look who I found coming up our front walk. Old Civic Virtue himself. Come on in, Latrivia. Old man, come on in.
Quit shoving me, McGee.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening, Mrs. McGee. Though it certainly is a bit of cold one.
Yeah, it's cold, but it's stimulating, boy.
I don't suppose you'd have a small glass of something.
My goodness, what's the matter with me? McGee, get his honor a nice cold glass of root beer.
Why, sure.
No. Thank you, anyway. Come to think of it, if I took any liquids, I'd clink all the way home. As I was saying to our street commissioner this morning, Bunderson, I said, this is the coldest...
Incidentally, Latrivia, how much does he get a year?
Who, the street commissioner?
Yeah.
Well, you're a taxpayer, so I suppose you're entitled to the information. His salary is $7,500 per annum.
How much is that a year?
Per annum means per year, McGee.
Oh. Well, is that in addition to his commission, Latrivia?
What commission?
Any commission. He's a commissioner, isn't he?
Yes, but he doesn't work on commission. He gets a straight salary.
Well, then why do they call him a commissioner?
Because he belongs to the street commission, you idiot.
Oh, he belongs to the commission, but the commissions don't belong to him, huh?
Is that your idea of fair play, Latrivia? Guy works all year long earning commissions, and the city says, no, you take your straight salary and like it. By George, I'm going to start an investigation, Latrivia, that'll start...
You go right ahead, McGee. I've been investigated by bigger dunderheads than you in my day, and if I...
Now, there's no use flying into a rage, Mr. Mayor. No. I assure you the investigation will be fair and impartial.
Certainly. All we want is a square deal for our public servants.
Of course, but
then... Man earns a commission, he's entitled to get a commission.
But he doesn't...
Plus his salary.
But he's not entitled to a commissary. As a member of the common council. A council. What I mean to say is that the street... He's a... We all in the... That is the... McGee.
Hey?
Will you do me a favor?
Why, of course he will, Mr. Mayor.
Just name it, Latrivia.
Well, when you get to Dugan's Lake... Will you walk out to the exact middle of it and jump up and down? Hard!
Now, there goes a very thoughtless guy. I don't suppose he ever stopped to think what might happen if I jumped up and down on the ice on Dugan's Lake.
pretty thin out there in the middle. Fella could bust right through.
Oh, well, he didn't know what he was saying, most likely.
No.
Look, dearie, if you're not going to Dugan's Lake, and I wouldn't blame you if you didn't...
What do you mean, if I'm not going? Certainly I'm going, and right away, too. I got my backup about this thing, by George. I'll hate myself in the morning if I don't go through with it now. So long, baby.
Wait a minute. Here's your mitten.
Huh? Oh. Oh, thanks. Well, so long.
Enjoy yourself, darling.
Okay.
Heavenly days. I do believe he's really going. Well, now, where was I? Oh, yes. Page 39. The alley where the dead man had been found was a blind areaway between the buildings.
Molly, I'm home, safe and sound. What time is it?
Oh, hello, dearie. It's just 10:30. You've only been gone 3 hours. Did you enjoy your walk?
Oh, it was marvelous. I'm pretty tired, but it was worth it. Did you ever see the moonlight on Lake Dugan in wintertime?
Oh.
I'm telling you, it's a spectacle. The stillness. The blue shadows of the trees on the dunes.
Oh.
The swoop of a night owl over the drifted snow. Ah, oh, by George, Molly, it's an experience that I'll never forget.
I'll get it, McGee. You must be completely worn out. Sit down and rest, sweet.
Ah.
79 Wistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Yeah? Who? Oh, he did? Ah, well, thank you very much, I'm sure. Goodbye. It was Kramer's drugstore, McGee.
Kramer's drugstore? What'd they want?
They said to tell you you left your mittens on the pinball machine.
There's something important I haven't mentioned lately, and that's the health advantage of a waxed home. Besides beauty and protection for your things, your home is cleaner, more sanitary, as you keep your floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly polished with Johnson's Wax. The wax seals the pores of the wood, guards against dirt and moisture. Johnson waxed surfaces are easier to keep clean because dust and dirt do not cling to them so readily. Areas that get extra heavy wear, such as hallways or windowsills, can be touched up as often as necessary without re-waxing the entire surface. And after you've used Johnson's Wax for a while, you'll notice that with every application, your floors and furniture take on greater beauty. That's why your favorite antique has such a soft, mellow luster. It's probably been protected with wax for a long time. And whether your things are old or new, it will pay you to polish them regularly with genuine Johnson's Wax.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of America's favorite comedians comes back to the NBC airwaves tonight. You'll hear him on his new show over most of these stations directly following Bob Hope.
Yes, and we know you join us in wishing good luck and even greater success to Red Skelton.
Red has spent 2 years in the Army, folks, doing a grand job of entertaining our men here on the high seas and in Europe. Red is one of the fortunate GIs who has an assured future.
But there are thousands and thousands of men who will for many years be dependent on you and us for hospital care, for rehabilitation and return to civil life. And there's a debt of honor we owe the families of those who lost their lives in our service.
The only way we can really pay these obligations is by our purchases of victory bonds, a profitable security for you, and a much-needed loan to our country.
Remember, it's strictly GI, government issue, a grand investment, and gratitude implied.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax finished products for home and industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Remember how relieved you were when you heard there was at last a vaccine to stamp out polio? Remember the early doubts and fears that it hadn't really been perfected? Those days are behind us. Areas where the Salk vaccine has been taken by substantial numbers of children and adults under 40 have shown remarkable results. But studies made last year show that the most susceptible group have been neglecting themselves. Almost 41 million adults under 40 years of age have not taken as much as one polio shot. You doubt that this is important? If so, please note carefully that after 2 years of rewarding statistics, in 1958, the incidence of polio started to climb again. The vaccine won't work on people who don't take it. At least 3 shots, spaced as your doctor or clinic recommends, are vital for maximum protection from polio. The CBS Radio Network and its affiliated stations join the United States Department of Health in urging, get your polio shots. Get them starting now.
Hey, everyone. I bring up that polio public service announcement for a very good reason. Soon, I will be taking the COVID-19 vaccine. I will be getting my first shot. And I'm glad to do it and eager to get the first vaccine. But the problem is that it takes 10 days for the vaccine to take effect. And even then, you're only half safe until you get the booster shot or the second shot of the vaccine. Whatever vaccine you're getting, whether it's the Moderna vaccine or the Pfizer vaccine, it doesn't matter. So please, everyone, get the COVID vaccine. And if you have to have the second shot, get that too in 21 days. Because not only are you saving your life, you're saving the lives of others around you. And let's hope that everyone does take the COVID-19 vaccine. This will not go away until you do. You'll be glad that you did in the long run.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Jello, everybody.
Yes, it's the Gay Family Series, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. Fioca puddings. Yes, sirree.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers, it's morning, and we find Katie, the maid, in the kitchen. Liz Cooper is just coming into the room.
Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Mrs. Cooper. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Hold it, Katie. This is not my birthday.
It isn't?
No.
Oh, dear, and I already put a candle in your grapefruit.
Too bad.
I can't understand how I made that mistake. When is your birthday, anyway?
Never.
Huh?
I had my last birthday a year ago today.
Oh, you've reached that point, huh?
It's awful. I never realized it, Katie. Today I'm 33. That's more than halfway to 35. I'm practically 40.
I know. Well, if you aren't going to celebrate, I better not bake you cake.
I should say not. I don't want anything to even remind me that it's my birthday.
All right.
What can I do about George?
What do you mean?
How can I possibly keep him from remembering it's my birthday?
Well, just don't tell him.
Katie, that's mean. Why, my birthday is the most important day in the year to George.
Liz, where are you, honey?
I'm out here in the kitchen, dear. You just watch the fuss he makes.
Oh, there you are. I've been looking all over the house for you.
You have, my little husband. What for?
You know what day this is, don't you?
Why, no. What day is it?
It's Saturday. I told you to call a plumber last Wednesday. The bathroom basin is stopped up again.
Ooh. Is there anything else?
No. Oh, yes.
What?
I'm late for the bank. I'll just skip breakfast. Goodbye, dear.
Oh, George?
Yes, dear? Katie, how can I hear Liz with you making all that racket?
Sorry.
What is it, Liz? I'm in a hurry.
Nothing.
Oh, well, goodbye, dear.
Bye.
Dear Mrs. Cooper.
George didn't give me any presents or flowers. He didn't even remember my birthday.
But Mrs. Cooper, you said you didn't want him to remember.
I didn't. I wanted him to forget about my birthday. But he forgot about my birthday.
Mrs. Cooper, you've been crying for an hour now. That won't help any.
He doesn't love me anymore. Oh.
Mrs. Cooper, a husband forgetting his wife's birthday is absolutely normal.
It is?
It's a male characteristic, like baldness and egotism.
So what?
Well, a smart wife always drops a hint at least 3 shopping days before her birthday.
Well, it's too late for me to do that with George. I know. I'll call up Mr. Atterbury and drop a hint, and then he'll mention it to George.
Good idea.
Now, how can I just hint at it? I know. I'll tell...
Sheridan Falls First National Bank.
Mr. Atterbury, please.
One moment.
Hello?
Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to a close relative of your head-savant vice president, happy birthday to me.
Hello? Hello? I think we have a bad connection.
Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me.
I heard that.
Good. Well, goodbye.
There, that ought to do it.
Did you send for me, Mr. Atterbury?
Yes, George boy. I just had the weirdest phone call.
Who was it?
I don't know.
Well, was it a man or a woman?
I don't know. It sounded something like this.
Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to a close relative of your handsome blonde vice president, happy birthday to me.
A close relative of mine? Oh, gee, I wonder who it can be.
Do you have any relatives who come from Mars?
No. And it isn't Liz's birthday.
Are you sure?
Oh, I know Liz. If it was her birthday, she'd never have let me out of the house without telling me.
True.
Yeah, besides, Liz's birthday is June the 3rd. Or is it February the 8th? Or is that our wedding anniversary? Well, I know they're both in the spring sometime. Close relative. How did that voice sound again?
Happy birthday to me.
Of course, Mother.
Mother? Your mother would pull a trick like that?
Yeah, she gets pretty cute sometimes.
Oh, cute, cute.
Well, I'm glad she called. I'll have to run out and buy her something and arrange a little surprise party for her.
Go ahead, boy.
I'll be in Miller's department store if you want me. Pardon me, miss. Will you wait on me?
Yes, sir. Hello, Mr. Cooper.
What?
I remember you from the other day when you were here with your wife. She was looking at coats and you were looking at prices.
Oh, yes. I'd like to buy a little birthday present and have it sent out to the house.
Certainly. What would you like?
Well, it's hard to decide, but I think a nightgown would be nice.
Yes, sir.
I suppose you want something sheer and lacy and invitingly feminine.
Well, no, I think you'd better make it long flannel.
Yeah. You've been married quite a while, haven't you?
What?
Nothing, nothing. I've got just the thing, Mr. Cooper. I'll send it out this afternoon. Do you want to put a card in?
Yes. Do you have one?
Uh-huh, there on the desk.
Okay. Just send it out this afternoon. Oh, by the way, do you have a bakery in the store?
Bakery? No.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah, here's the card.
Mm.
Well, I'd better get going. I have to find a cake that will hold 65 candles. So long.
Bye. 65 candles. Long flannel nightgown. Huh, I only hope I look that good at her age.
Come in.
Hi, Mr. Atterbury.
Liz girl, come in. What brings you to the bank?
Oh, nothing special. I just wanted to know if George got a certain message.
A certain message?
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me.
Oh, of course, of course. You called and I gave George the message, and he ran right out to buy some presents for your dad!
What's wrong?
Well, I thought that... George said that we decided when he was... You would... Wrong? Nothing's wrong.
Well, I guess I wasn't very subtle. What did George say when you told him?
He knew it all the time.
Oh.
He's out buying some presents right now.
Oh, isn't he sweet?
Yes. Well, goodbye.
I'll see you later.
Goodbye.
I'm going. Don't push me.
Sorry. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. Whew. Now to alert George, boy. Let's see. Where did he go? Oh, Miller's department store. I hope he's still there. Hello? Miller's department store? It's very important that I locate George Cooper. He's there and I... No. Cooper. C-O-O-P-E... No. P, like an ape. A-P-E. No. A. Like an appetite. A-P-P. No. P. That's right, like in Cooper. George Cooper. See if you can locate him right away. This is a matter of wife or death. I don't care if you get it or not. Find him right away. Well, it's to be hoped that something happens with real speed to save the day in the Cooper family. Speed. Speed. Now, what does that word make me think? I've got it. The new speedy way to prepare Jell-O. And get a beautiful finished Jell-O dessert in just about 1 hour. Here's what you do. Dissolve Jell-O in 1 cup of hot water. Then add 1 cup of ice cubes or crushed ice and fill up the cup with water. Stir until the ice melts completely. Pop into the refrigerator to chill until firm. And in just about 1 fleeting hour, you take out a glorious, glamorous Jell-O dessert. This new quick-setting Jell-O idea is a real godsend for the busy holiday season. And no matter which of those 6 delicious Jell-O flavors you choose, you always get a winner. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O, a registered trademark of General Foods that stands for Red Letter Desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
And now back to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband. As As we look in on the Coopers again, George thinks it's his mother's birthday and is out buying her a present. Mr. Atterbury has just found out it's Liz's birthday instead and is calling the department store frantically trying to locate George.
Hello. 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 Hello.
Hello.
I'm waiting for Mr. Cooper. Who's this?
Oh, Mr. Cooper's gone.
Oh.
I waited on him. Can I help you?
No, no, I have to... Wait a minute. You waited on him?
Uh-huh.
He bought a gift. What was it?
A long flannel nightgown.
Oh, yeah!
You said it, Buster.
What?
Sir.
Have you sent that out yet?
Oh, no, sir. We're just leaving.
Good, good. Change it. Send, I wonder what Liz would like.
You mean his wife?
Yes, yes.
She was looking at a suede jacket she was just crazy about.
Good, good. Change that nightgown to the suede jacket and send it out to Cooper's right away.
Yes, sir, right away. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Miss Perkins.
Yes, sir?
I'm going out. I have to find George Cooper. He thinks it's his mother's birthday, but it's his wife's.
Oh, God!
That girl's been working for me too long.
Thank you.
Who was it, Katie?
A package from Miller's department store. Looks like a gift.
Oh, it's my birthday present. Gimme.
But it's addressed to Mr. Cooper.
Of course, he doesn't want me to know.
Well, I'll put it in the hall closet.
Let me see it. Do you think it's addressed?
Well, are you going to open it?
Of course not. I wouldn't do a thing like that. Oh, look, Katie, it's a suede jacket.
Oh, I see.
It's the very one I've been looking at. Oh, that darling, wonderful husband of mine.
Oh, he certainly is thoughtful.
Oh, Katie, do you need anything at the store? I just have to wear this someplace. How about a dozen eggs?
No, we already have 2 dozen in the refrigerator.
Well, I'll get you another dozen. I want to wear this jacket to the store.
All right, I'll start getting dinner ready.
Well, what are we having for dinner?
The biggest omelet in the world.
Well, I'll be back in a little while.
Mr. Atterbury's office?
Is he there, Miss Perkins? I want to tell him I won't be back for a while yet. I had trouble finding a cake that will hold 65 candles.
Well, he's not here, Mr. Cooper. He's out looking for you.
Me? What for?
Well, he said something about it not being your mother's birthday. It's your wife's.
My wife's? Oh, my gosh. They delivered the nightgown I bought for my mother, and if I know Liz, she'll open it.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well, there's only one thing for me to do. I'll go home and see if I can sneak it out before she sees it. Goodbye.
No one in the kitchen. Let's see now. She always puts packages in the hall closet. Yeah, the hall is clear. Now, if that flannel nightgown is only in... Oops, oh, that must be Liz. I'll have to hide in the closet.
I'm back, Katie. Gee, I better put this jacket back in the closet before George gets home. Back you go, little present. Oh, that must be George. I don't want him to catch me with this. I'll hide in the closet.
Mrs. Cooper? Mr. Cooper?
Phew, it's only Katie.
Yeah.
What?
What?
Help! Help! Help, George!
Here I am.
Oh, George, there's a great big ugly... Oh, it's you!
Yes, you scared me, too.
Oh, what were you doing in the closet?
Well, I wanted to get the present I sent you and exchange it for a better one.
What? I should say not.
Oh, but honey,
have a confession to make, George. I opened the present you sent, and it's just what I wanted.
It is?
Absolutely. It's the same one I was looking at the other day.
You're not kidding me, Liz.
Of course not. I put it on right away.
You did?
This afternoon?
Why not? I was so eager to show it off, I wore it down to the market.
You wore it? Oh, Liz, that isn't quite the thing to wear to the market.
Well, I know I shouldn't have worn it shopping, but I just couldn't resist.
Didn't people stare at you?
They couldn't keep their eyes off me.
I'll bet they couldn't.
Oh, that cute little cashier wouldn't let me alone till I took it off and let her try it on.
You took it off? In the market?
Don't worry, George. She was careful.
That's not what I was worried about. I hope you didn't catch cold.
Cold? No. As a matter of fact, on the way home, I was so warm, I took it off and carried it over my arm.
I must be losing my mind. Didn't you notice that a crowd was following you?
Crowd? Oh, George, it's a nice suede jacket, but it wouldn't cause that much fuss.
Suede jacket? You were wearing a suede jacket?
Of course. Don't you know what you gave me?
Well, sure, a suede nightgown. A jacket. Well, happy birthday, Liz.
Thank you.
George, boy, there you are. I've been looking all over town for you.
Oh, hi, Mr. Atterbury. You're just in time to see the birthday present George gave me.
Good, good. There's nothing smarter looking than a suede jacket.
I'll get it out of... How did you know?
Yeah, how did you know?
I don't know, just lucky, I guess. Unless George told me.
Me? Why, oh, yes, I told him, sure.
Yeah, he's been talking about it all week.
Really? Oh, George, and I thought you'd forgotten.
Oh, don't be silly.
Oh, honey, you're so wonderful. I don't know why I ever mistrusted you.
Neither do I.
Give me a kiss. I'll get my present out of the closet.
Say, what's going on here?
I called up the store and told them to switch presents.
Oh, thanks. Oh, gee, you really saved the day. She'll never suspect I thought it was Mother's birthday. I wonder who... Oh, no.
What's the matter?
The surprise party. I invited some of my mother's friends.
I'll get rid of them.
I'll get the door.
You're too late, boy.
Surprise! Surprise!
Oh, Mrs. Martin. And Miss Flannoy.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Liz Hooper. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you, but I...
Are we here too soon?
What do you mean?
Well, where is...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Liz. Happy birthday to you.
Well, that's very pretty. But what we'd like to know is, where is our...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Liz. Happy birthday to you.
They sure sing a lot, don't they? Lousy, too.
Well, it's something to sing about. It's Liz's birthday.
Yes, Liz's birthday.
Ellen... Somebody made a boo-boo. If we want to get in on this party, we'll have to play ball.
With all righty.
Will someone please tell me what's going on here?
Oh, nothing, dear, nothing. We just came to your party.
Well, that was very nice of you. Oh, and you brought presents. For me?
Well, all right, here. Here, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
That one's for me.
Oh, thank you. Look, George, just what I need. An embroidered nightcap.
Yes, it's lovely.
Let's see what the other one is.
Well, a hot water bottle.
It's wonderful for your lumbago.
Lumbago? What makes you think I have lumbago?
Doesn't everybody?
No.
Keep it, dear. You will.
Well, thanks, anyway.
Oh, by the way, George, we went round back and gave Katie the cake.
Oh, no.
Well, we would have brought it in, but we couldn't get near it. The heat, you know. Yes, and I singed my eyebrows.
Well, it's just as well.
Did you get a cake for me, George?
Turn out the light. I'm coming in with the cake.
Oh. Okay, bring her in.
Here I come.
Oh, God, look at the candles.
Katie, what happened? You look like you're on fire.
I ain't seen a blaze like that since the Chicago fire. Go ahead, Liz, blow it out.
I'll try.
Almost. It's only about 20 more. Six more.
Well, wait till it comes around again. I'm dizzy. There. 65 candles? What's going on, George?
Well, you see...
These friends of your mother's, embroidered nightcaps, a hot water bottle, 65 candles?
Well, I might as well...
Well, it worked, Mr. Cooper.
Huh?
What worked?
I told Mr. Cooper that you felt that you were getting old, and he figured if he gave you a real old ladies party, it'd make you see how young you really are.
Yes!
Worked fine, George. Oh, sure. It worked all right.
Oh, George, you really understand me, don't you? That's the sweetest thing a husband ever did.
I don't get it. Don't ask any questions. You might louse things up. Besides, that cake looks mighty tasty.
What's the matter, Liz?
Oh, I'm just happy, George. I'm married to the most thoughtful man in the world.
Oh, it's nothing.
It is, too. I'm going to put this jacket on, and I'm never going to take it off.
Oh, Liz.
I mean it. It'll remind me how wonderful and thoughtful and sweet you are. I'm even going to wear it to bed tonight.
Oh, it's silly.
Well, I am. Oh, what's this? Oh, a card, and I didn't even see it.
Uh-oh. Did you change the card, too, Mr. Atterbury?
What card?
George, I can't keep anything from you, can I?
Huh?
You even knew I'd be silly enough to wear the jacket to bed. Look, Mr. Atterbury, the card says, "Hope this keeps you warm in bed tonight."
Say, here's a wonderful new salad to perk up that leftover turkey. Cranberry and orange salad made with fruit-rich shimmering orange Jell-O. Just dissolve one package of orange Jell-O in 1 3/4 cups of hot water and chill. Put 1 medium orange and 2 cups of raw cranberries through the food chopper. Add 3 tablespoons of sugar and fold into the slightly thickened Jell-O. Chill in individual molds and serve in crisp lettuce. It's a glorious flavor combination. Fresh-tasting, fruit-rich orange Jell-O with tart, tempting red cranberries. All six delicious Jell-O flavors are brimful of locked-in goodness. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Flavor sealed right in so it can't get out until your first delectable spoonful. And gay sparkling Jell-O dresses up all your holiday meals. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O, and Jell-O spells a treat. You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The part of Katie, the maid, was played by Ruth Parrott. Listen, folks, how'd you like to put Lucille Ball in your pocket? There's a beautiful color cover and story of your favorite redhead in the November 27th issue of Quick, the pocket-sized magazine. It's on the stands now, so be sure to get your copy.
Henry, and on our honeymoon, too.
But gosh, honey, the new improved Instant Sanka's really different.
Sure thing. Just look at the new richer coffee color. Taste the new full-bodied real coffee flavor. Discover how much less Instant Sanka costs. And did you know the makers of Instant Sanka make the only caffeine-free coffee? The kind that can't affect anybody's nerves or sleep. Try the new Instant Sanka. It's wonderful.
Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband again next week, presented by...
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings. Yum, yum, yum. Jell-O tapioca puddings. Yes, sirree.
Bob Lamon speaking.
This is CBS, where you hear Lucille Ball and My Favorite Husband every Saturday on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. And Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, most of us have already made our plans for celebrating Thanksgiving. But Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, hadn't given it much thought. Up until last Friday morning when she sat down to breakfast with her landlady.
Well, it's only 6 more days till Thanksgiving, Mrs. Davis.
I can hardly believe it, Connie. A whole year has gone by since last Thanksgiving.
Isn't it awful? The years do that every year.
It seems like yesterday that I was preparing our last Thanksgiving dinner. We didn't have very much money to spend on our shopping, but we celebrated just the same.
Oh, I'll never forget that meal, Mrs. Davis. A whole roast stuffed pepper.
I feel very badly about not being able to spend Thanksgiving with you this year, Connie, but I've accepted an invitation from my sister Angela.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. Davis.
I'd ask you to join me at her place, but she hasn't been at all well lately. So we're just having the immediate family, my brother Victor and myself. Oh, poor Angela. It seems the older she gets, the more absent-minded she gets.
Yes, you've mentioned it to me, Mrs. Davis.
Lately, she's been worse than ever. Why, sometimes she can be talking right along and suddenly, right in the middle of a sentence...
Yes? Right in the middle of a sentence?
Right in the middle of a sentence.
Right in the middle of a sentence what?
Right in the middle of a sentence what?
You've been seeing a little too much of Angela.
Angela?
She's your brother Victor's absent-minded sister. But don't worry about my holiday, Mrs. Davis. I'll get my pearly teeth into something on Thanksgiving Day.
How about Mr. Boynton?
Yum, yum. Oh, you mean spending the day with him? Well, he hasn't asked me as yet, but I'll toss him a hint at school today.
I'm certain that he'll invite you out, Connie, and then you can be sure of your turkey and all the trimmings.
I don't know about the turkey, but if Mr. Boynton and I eat out, I'm a cinch to take my usual trimming.
Does Mr. Boynton always insist on going Dutch, Connie?
I wouldn't say that, Mrs. Davis. It's just a coincidence that I'm buying him a pair of wooden shoes for Christmas. Oh, but why worry about it now? As Madison's star athlete Stretch Snodgrass told me in English class the other day, live good in the present, the future never done nothing to nobody. Stretch is a nice kid, though. He seemed genuinely concerned about my spending Thanksgiving alone. He told me he would have asked me to his home, but his folks are going out of town for the weekend with the Dentons. Oh, that must be Walter now. He's driving me down to school. Coming, Walter!
I'll clear off the table and get started on the dishes, Connie. Say hello to Walter for me.
All right, Mrs. Davis. Come on in, Walter.
I step over this threshold with fear and trepidation.
What do you mean?
I am the editor-in-chief of the Madison Monitor. True?
True.
Well, I made the mistake of letting Stretch Snodgrass set up some of the type yesterday, and he sneaked an item into the personal column that cannot but be a source of great mortification to someone very near and dear to both our hearts.
Who?
You.
Me?
None other. I brought a copy with me. Look at this paragraph, Miss Brooks.
Let's see it. To who it may concern. That's Stretch, all right. It says, it is pitiful to be alone on Thanksgiving Day. If there is one way how people should show their real Thanksgivingness, it is by sharing their dinner with some poor, unfortunate fellow human person who is alone. Without mentioning any names. Oh, well, that's a relief.
Keep reading.
Without mentioning any names, if somebody wants to share his or her meal with this lonely human person, all you have to do is walk up and say, you can have Thanksgiving dinner with me, Miss Brooks.
Well, Miss Brooks, isn't that awful? Are you going to punish Stretch?
I'm not making any snap judgments, Walter. First, let's see if this ad brings any results.
Excuse me, Miss Brooks, but I'd like to talk to you before you go into your classroom.
I think that might be arranged, Mr. Boynton.
I just read this rather peculiar notice in the school paper, and I wondered...
Oh, that's a little prank that Stretch played on me, Mr. Boynton. Just pay a lot of attention to it.
When I read it, Miss Brooks, I made up my mind I'd be the first one to talk to you about it.
Really? How nice, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, it isn't easy to be alone on Thanksgiving, on a holiday.
No, you're so right.
Many's the Thanksgiving dinner I've eaten alone. But when I saw that notice in the paper, I said to myself, by George Philip Boynton...
I didn't know your name was George Philip Boynton.
It is, and that's just an expression I use. As I was saying, I said to myself, this is one Thanksgiving you don't have to eat alone. Now, what I want to ask you isn't easy for me, Miss Brooks.
Maybe I can help. I promise not to order anything over $1.50. Please continue.
Since I saw that paragraph in the Monitor, I wondered if... Well, if...
I'll make it a dollar even and I'll leave the tip. Please, Mr. Boynton, just ask me what you want to.
All right, I will.
Good.
Miss Brooks... If that notice brings you more than one invitation to dinner, could I make use of the extra one?
You wanted to see me, Mr. Conklin?
Yes, Miss Brooks. Sit down, won't you, please? Take this leather chair by my desk. That's it. Are you nice and comfy?
Yes, sir. I'm fine, but how are you?
Splendid, thanks. This is the time of year when we should all be imbued with the true Thanksgiving spirit. That's why I've summoned you to my office, Miss Brooks, to tell you that in spite of the inconveniences you have wreaked upon me, I harbor no ill will.
Well, that's very nice to hear, Mr. Conklin. I have been the source of annoyance to you on occasion, I suppose, but I didn't...
I am thankful for everything that's happened to me in the past year. Take the time you drop that typewriter on my toe. I just give thanks that it didn't land higher and fracture my whole foot.
That was careful of me, wasn't it?
Then when I think back to the time you stepped on my eyeglasses and crushed them, I give thanks that they weren't on my nose at the time. But my main purpose in calling you here is to inform you that I have read the notice in this morning's Monitor.
Oh, that's just a joke, Mr. Conklin. It was written by one of the pupils in my English class.
Yes, I could tell from its construction. However, I want you to know, Miss Brooks, that I was quite touched by that item. The more so since I, too, will be all alone this Thanksgiving.
But what about your daughter and Mrs. Conklin?
But they're spending the day with Harriet's grandmother, my wife's dear mother. We asked her to join us for the holiday, but she lives almost 100 miles away, and she thinks she's got high blood pressure or something. So nothing would do but that Harriet and Martha visit her. Bless her crotchety old heart.
But why aren't you going along?
What? Me make a trip like that with my blood pressure? The doctor has absolutely forbidden it. In any event, when I read that notice, Miss Brooks, a thought occurred to me which might make Thanksgiving more enjoyable for both of us.
Both of us?
Yes, yes. Since we're both going to be alone, I'd like to ask you... that is, I wonder if you... what I have to say isn't easy for me, Miss Brooks.
Maybe I can help. I promise not to order anything over $1.50.
Loneliness can do more to undermine a person's morale than almost anything. And, well, if you'd... that is, if possible...
I'll make it $1 and I'll leave the tip.
Please don't misunderstand, Miss Brooks. What I want to ask you is... well, if that notice brings you more than one invitation, could I make use of the extra one?
Why should you be an exception? Oh, of course, Mr. Conklin. Now, if you'll excuse me, sir, I've got to get to my classroom.
Very well, you may go. Be sure and keep me apprised of all results, Miss Brooks.
Yes, sir. I'm sure we'll be pelted with turkey dinners. Spirit of Thanksgiving. Are you comfy, Miss Brooks? Take this chair, Miss Brooks. Of all the...
Hi, Miss Brooks. I see that you just came out of Daddy's office. Is he very disgruntled this morning?
No, Harriet. He's not grumbling any louder than usual. He does seem a bit put out at having to eat Thanksgiving dinner alone.
Oh, but he's not going to. Grandmother's coming down to our place after all. We're going to surprise Daddy.
Oh, that should do it.
He's so sentimental about holidays. Now he'll be able to do his Thanksgiving carving just like always. It'll be loads of fun. I've already invited Walter Denton over.
Good. I can't think of anyone your father would rather carve.
I know he's not crazy about Walter, but during the holiday season, Daddy's always a little more mellow. I'm going to do some of the shopping today. Mother gave me $5 for a turkey.
That doesn't seem like much, Harriet. How big a turkey are you planning on getting?
Oh, just a nice 8-pounder.
But will that be enough to go around? Mr. Boynton's a pretty big eater, you know.
Mr. Boynton? But he'll be eating with you, won't he?
He certainly will. And at what better place could he join me for Thanksgiving dinner than in the warm confines of your cozy dining room?
Well, I would like to invite you both, Miss Brooks, but I've only got this $5. That's all Mother said to spend.
Tell you what, Harriet, give me the $5 and I'll see that we get a big enough turkey for all of us.
Well, if you really want to come, Miss Brooks, I'd certainly like to have you. And I'm sure Mother would, too. But... there have been times when you and Daddy...
Don't you see, Harriet, if Walter's coming, you'll be doing your Daddy a good turn by inviting me.
Why, how do you mean, Miss Brooks?
With both of us there, we'll be an antidote for each other.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate dental cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. More than 2 years' research showed the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way stopped tooth decay best. Better than any other home method of oral hygiene. No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the one and only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate dental cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, when lunch period arrived, as luck and I would have it, Mr. Boynton brought his tray right to my table in the cafeteria. In spite of the fact that he had a nice lunch before him, he didn't begin eating, but sat with his fork poised and stared into my eyes with a deep and absorbing emotion. It was a terribly romantic moment, as Mr. Boynton leaned across the table and in a voice choked with passion said,
"Get any extra invites to Thanksgiving dinner?"
"No, and get your fork out of my cottage cheese."
"Sorry. I was just wondering about that notice in the monitor."
"Well, you can forget about the notice, Mr. Boynton. I've wangled us both an invitation to join the Conklins for the holiday."
"Oh, say, that's wonderful. Mrs. Conklin's a fine cook."
"There's only one catch. We've got exactly $5 with which to buy a turkey that'll feed 6 people."
"Well, how in the world are we going to do that, Miss Brooks?"
"You and I can chip in another $5 between us."
"There must be some other way."
"Well, there isn't. Not unless I put up the entire amount, and I can't unless I pawn my earrings again."
"Oh, but Miss Brooks..."
"I wouldn't care if I hadn't had my ears pierced. You have no idea how drafty my lobes get in November."
"You won't have to pawn anything. There is a way we can get a good-sized young turkey very reasonably."
"How?"
"By merely eliminating the butcher."
"What do we do, buy the turkey from his parents?"
"Don't you see, Miss Brooks, we have to go after a live turkey. Well, they're much cheaper than in the stores. Why, we can probably pick one up for even less than $5.
"Well, there's nothing to it. Of course not. All we have to do is find a young turkey who hasn't learned the value of money."
"Once we get a good one, we can kill it ourselves, pluck the feathers, clean it, and dress it."
"There must be some other way."
"Believe me, this will work, Miss Brooks. I know a place about 20 miles from here. A fellow named Tobin has a turkey farm. We'll drive out after school and see what he's got."
"Say, it might be fun at that. A nice drive in the country."
"Well, sure. The fresh air will be good for all of us."
"All of us?"
"You, me, and my pet frog, McDougal." "Well, he hasn't been at all well lately, Miss Brooks."
"What's the trouble?"
"He can't seem to sleep."
"Maybe he reads too late." "I mean, where's he been sleeping?"
"Oh, his usual place, on a newspaper in his cage."
"Well, there's your answer. How can anybody sleep with the news that's in the paper nowadays?"
"Well, old Tobin certainly gave us a nice gobbler for $5.
"Yes, he did, but I still can't get too enthusiastic about having to execute it ourselves."
"Oh, you just feel that way because she's a hen turkey. Tobin seemed quite attached to her, too. What was it he called her again?"
"Bernice." "Oh, isn't that cute? She knows her name."
"Oh, that's nothing. Mac knows his name, too."
"Your frog?"
"Of course. His cage is right beside you on the seat. Just pick it up and call to him."
"Oh, that's ridiculous, Mr. Boynton. I'm not going to start any conversations with McDougal."
"Did I tell you?"
"Well, if you don't mind, I'm putting him in the back with Bernice." "There you go, Mac. You can keep each other company back there."
"Oh, poor Mac. He's been so apathetic from lack of sleep, he probably won't even notice Bernice."
"From the saying, like father, like frog." "But Bernice is very interested in Mac." "Oh, isn't that cute? She's got her head right next to his cage."
"What in the world is Mac doing?"
"You have just heard the frog's version of a wolf whistle."
"Huh, that's one for the book. Mac is definitely smitten by that hen turkey." "Say, What's going on in the back seat now, Miss Brooks?
Something that should be going on in the front seat. That is, they're getting better acquainted. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he's asking her out to a dance.
Well, that'd be quite a sight. Oh, actually, Bernice is much too tall for Mac.
Oh, I don't know. She's a natural for a barn dance. Do-si-do, now I ain't bluffing. Dance too hard and you'll lose your stuffing. Oh, calm down, Bernice. I was just kidding.
Now that we've got her, Miss Brooks, where are we supposed to take the turkey?
To the Conklin's backyard. Mr. and Mrs. Conklin are attending a tea party, so it won't spoil Mr. Conklin's surprise.
Well, will Harriet be there to give us a hand?
Uh-huh, and so will Walter. He's bringing his AXE. Well, how do you like that? She can spell, too.
Careful with his crate, Walter. There's a slat loose on the side.
Yeah, I got it, Mr. Boynton. Now let's set it down in the driveway.
Oh, what a wonderful turkey.
Sorry, Mac. You'll have to wait in the car.
She's a beauty, all right. Absolutely inspiring. Oh, what a perfect combination. The lovely, graceful neck of a turkey and my trusty Boy Scout hatchet.
What a charming thought. You've been seeing too many kid shows on television. But if it has to be done, the quicker the better.
Right, Charm, Miss Brooks. Want a blindfold turkey?
No, but I do.
Look out, she's getting away.
Grab her wings, Walter. She's heading for the house.
Oh, I missed her. Oh, Miss Brooks, do something.
Don't look at me. I'm on her side.
She's going through the dining room window.
Now, what made her do that?
Maybe she wants to try on one of the platters for size.
We've got to get her out of there before Daddy comes home. We want this to be a surprise. Come on in the side door.
Where could she have gone?
She doesn't seem to be in the dining room anymore.
Maybe she went into Daddy's study.
You look in there, Harriet. And Walter, you try the kitchen.
But where are you going to look?
I'll take the closet with Mr. Boynton. You kids go ahead.
But, Miss Brooks, you don't think the turkey really went into the closet, do you?
Who knows? It shouldn't take us more than 20 minutes to find out.
I think the turkey's definitely in this study somewhere. Take a look behind the couch, Walter.
Okay, Harriet. I'll sneak up on the little beauty with the stealth of a barefoot pilgrim.
That might be Daddy. He always forgets his key. Walter, you stay put behind that couch. Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton, follow me.
Where are you going to hide us?
In this clothes closet right across the hall. Quick, Miss Brooks, get in.
Okay.
Be right there. Hello, Daddy.
Forgot my key again, Harriet.
Where's Mother?
She's doing some shopping for tonight.
For dinner?
Oh, don't mention that word. I ate so much at that confounded tea party that I can hardly breathe. I'm going into my study and lie down on the couch for a while.
Oh, but you can't. I mean, well, you know what nightmares you get when you go to sleep after eating. Remember the time you thought there were bats in your bedroom?
That was after I saw Lost Weekend. Now, don't fuss around me, child. I can hardly keep my eyes open.
But, Daddy, wouldn't the bedroom be more comfortable?
I'd never make it up the stairs, Harriet. Just call me in an hour or so, please.
Oh, dear. Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton, come out of the closet.
Go away.
Did I hear your father say he was going to take a nap in the study, Harriet?
That's right, Mr. Boynton. And I'm almost positive the turkey's in there.
Well, we can't be sure. I'm going to look around the back of the house.
Okay, Mr. Boynton. Miss Brooks, let's tiptoe up to the study door and listen. He's asleep already, thank goodness.
Well, let's open the door then. Take another peek.
Look, Miss Brooks. The turkey just came out of that closet. She's walking toward the couch.
Now he's starting to wake up.
Daddy's looking at the turkey.
Now the turkey's looking at Daddy. I wonder which one will scream first.
What's that? Oh, it's a nightmare. Oh, I should never have tried to sleep after all that food. Look, turkey. Nice turkey. I know you're not there. But please go away.
You stay here, Harriet. I've got an idea. Mr. Conklin. Hello, Mr. Conklin.
What? What? Miss Brooks, is that you? Are you really here?
What's the difference, as long as it's a nightmare? I heard you moaning in your sleep, sir, and I thought maybe...
Never mind what you thought. Get this turkey out of my study.
What turkey?
What turkey? What was that?
Maybe your dream turkey has an allergy.
The turkey just walked out the door. That sneeze came from behind the couch.
It's just me, Mr. Conklin. Me and my trusty hatchet.
Oh, God! Dream or no dream, boy, there's no reason to go berserk. We've had our differences, surely. But deep down in my heart, I've always had a warm spot for you.
Hysterical? Why don't you lie down and close your eyes?
How can I close my eyes with Walter standing over me with a hatchet?
Walter? Walter who?
If I don't call my doctor when I wake up, I'll never go to sleep again. Oh, well, I might as well relax.
That's the idea, Mr. Conklin. Take a nice, long snooze.
Miss Brooks, Bernice just ran out in the backyard and... I beg your pardon, Mr. Conklin. I didn't mean to disturb you.
Oh, that's all right, Boynton. You'll disappear in a few minutes.
Disappear?
Mr. Conklin's been dreaming, and let's keep it that way.
It's all right, Miss Brooks. The turkey ran right into our garage, and I closed the door.
What's going on here?
We just wanted to surprise you, sir.
May I say, you have?
Please don't be angry, Daddy. Miss Brooks saved us a lot of money by getting a live turkey. I only gave her $5.
$5?
Yes, sir. You see, you're not going to be alone after all. That was the surprise Harriet planned. Not only is your mother-in-law coming down for Thanksgiving, but we're all joining you, too.
And now I have a dispatch for you. After the tea, I saw my doctor, and he put me on a strict vegetarian diet. Harriet and her mother are going to spend the holidays with Granny as planned. As for you, Miss Brooks, kindly hand over the $5 my daughter gave you.
But we paid that for the turkey.
You can have the turkey. All I want is my money.
But we can't get a refund now. The used turkey market is shot to pieces. What will Mr. Boynton and I do with an entire turkey?
That, Miss Brooks, is your concern. For once, I might add, the joke is on you.
Well, I've celebrated some Thanksgivings in my time, but this is the biggest bird I ever received.
Eve Arden returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight. Show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Luster cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumas' magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Better than a soap, better than a liquid. Luster Cream is a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair three ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen. Soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream shampoo.
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a luster cream shampoo.
And now, once again, here is Eve Arden.
70 little children in one classroom. That's the kind of critical situation your community faces. Unless it can recruit new elementary school teachers immediately. Our increased school population also needs urgently more buildings, more textbooks, more supplies than ever. Better schools make better communities. So for improved educational facilities, Join and work with your local civic groups and school boards. For further information, write to the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools, 2 West 45th Street, New York 19, New York.
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Lustre Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, and Gloria McMillan.
Doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days. Yes, 36 leading skin specialists proved in tests on 1,285 different women that Palmolive soap facials using nothing but Palmolive brought new complexion beauty to 2 women out of 3. Just wash your face 3 times daily with Palmolive soap, each time for 60 seconds, massaging Palmolive's beauty lather onto your skin. Then rinse and pat dry. So start your Palmolive facials today. Remember, doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days.
If you like mysteries that are as full of chuckles as chills, be sure to hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday over this same network. Don't miss the exciting and laughable adventures of these amateur detectives. Hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday night. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting. Starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's a problem with any good executive just how much authority to delegate. A top-ranking official must constantly walk the tightrope of decision strung between the posts of authority and delegation. Dr. William Todhunter Hall has solved the situation rather neatly. Executive and academic matters are disposed of at his office in the administration building as they come up. Student and personal problems he prefers to deal with in the quiet of his own home at number 1 Faculty Row, where at the present moment he and his lovely wife Victoria are talking with Charles Merriweather, a member of the governing board. Dr. Hall is saying,
"And I'm glad you're back in town, Charles. Our social life always suffers from your absence due to a certain cheerfulness you impart and to your uncomplicated attitude toward everything."
"And if I may interrupt, thank you for your Christmas present. It was a very nice one and very thoughtful."
"Well, I'm very glad you liked it. What was it?"
"Diogenes, put down your lantern. Here he is."
"Most people would have hinted around until they found out. Now, you probably told your secretary to see what we might like and gave her carte blanche to fill out the order and then left town."
"That's exactly what I did, ma'am. Only I amplified the instructions a bit. I said, 'Peggy, use your own judgment on a Christmas gift for the Halls, remembering that the best is none too good for them and price is no object. But don't be an idiot.' Peggy, I might add, is quite beautiful, and I pay her twice what any other secretary would get, only because she's my wife's niece, and not because she ever knows what day it is." "What did I give you for Christmas?"
a lifetime subscription to the Literary Census. We thank you and recommend another raise for Peggy.
One more raise and she'll be making more than I am. I'm all for happy employee relationships, but I never could see why an employer can't have a little happiness, too. Peggy gets $100 a week and earns all but 85 of it.
Where did you go on your trip, Mr. Merriweather? And was it golf or business?
Well, it was golf on the agenda and business on my income tax. That is, it was supposed to be golf on the agenda. But the further south I went, the colder it got, and I hate to play with earmuffs on. I can't hear the caddy's dirty comments. So I swapped a couple of oil fields to make the trip legitimate tax-wise and came home to see you. Not you, Bill, particularly, just Mrs. Hall. She's prettier.
I find her rather nice to come home to myself.
Between you two, I won't dare leave the house. I'll have to stand just inside the front door with my lipstick in my hand.
Ma'am, as one of your more outspoken admirers...
Oh, good heavens, I'd forgotten completely. Young Thurber told me he was coming over. This must be he.
Well, Louisa, let him in. Is that Dawson Thurber, the ROTC captain?
Yes, darling, it is.
Well, if this is a personal interview, Bill, I'd better be on
my
way.
Hello, Dr. Paul. Hello, Mr. Thurber. I'm a little early, but your housekeeper told me to come right in.
Well, that's quite all right, Mr. Thurber. I'm Mrs. Hall.
Hello, Mrs. Hall. Hello. Mr. Merriweather, this is the student commander of Ivy's ROTC, Captain Dawson Thurber. Mr. Merriweather is a member of our Board of Governors.
How do you do, sir?
I'm glad to meet you, son. You have a very snappy unit. How's it shaping up for the review tomorrow?
All in order, sir. You're reviewing us, aren't you, Dr. Hall?
Oh, I am indeed. It's a great honor. Dedicating the new war memorial to the men of Ivy who finished their courses with the highest possible honors on foreign soil. But, did you come here to consult me about tomorrow's arrangements, Captain?
No, sir. We're pretty well organized on that. This is more of a personal matter. It's about my girl.
Well, I was going to excuse myself, Captain, but if this is about an affair of the heart, I'll just stay here and throw in some advice which I'm sure you're much too intelligent to take.
I'd welcome an outside opinion, Mr. Merriweather.
Well, what's the difficulty, Thurber?
And who's the girl?
Well, first, you know the hot dog wagon on the campus?
Oh, the one the students call the a la carte?
Why, certainly, certainly. A fellow puts real butter on his popcorn, not melted laundry soap. The arrival of yours, Thurby, seems too old.
No, sir, not a rival, just a disturbing influence. He's my girl's father, Fred Sherman. His daughter is Penny Sherman.
Oh, yes, Penny Sherman. She's a lovely girl, Captain. I didn't know her father owned the a la carte.
May I ask why he's a disturbing influence?
Well, Dr. Hall, everybody likes Fred. He's a great guy. That Penny thinks is kind of degrading for her father to be selling weenies. I'm afraid she's just a little bit of a snob.
Well, I wouldn't be too severe with her, Captain. Perhaps she hasn't reached the age or acquired the perspective to understand that social status means very little to a man of character and independence. The a la carte is a good, honest, Ivy institution, and I respect it. And its proprietor.
Besides, he was around this college long before his daughter was, so she can't say he went into business just to embarrass her. So, maybe I'm unsympathetic because it's been so long since I've been embarrassed.
How does she show her snobbery, Captain? I mean, just what does she do or not do?
Well, she always tries to steer the gang away from the dog wagon, and I believe it cuts deeper with her father than he'd have us think. I enjoy talking to him. But Penny thinks I'm just trying to show how democratic I am.
Well, what course of action did you think I might take to alleviate the situation, Captain? Call her in and give her a brief lecture on the energy value of between-class nutrition? And why she shouldn't bark at the dogs which are sending her through college?
I didn't expect you to take any action yourself, sir. I just thought maybe you could give me some advice on how to cope with the matter. It may seem a little trivial to you, but frankly, if something isn't done pretty quick, I'm afraid a certain beautiful campus romance is out the window.
Well, I'm sorry I have no large economy-sized package of wisdom in my pocket at the moment to give you, but I'll certainly give it some thought.
And when my husband says he'll think about it, Captain, that's a pretty firm commitment. Roughly equivalent to a notarized contract.
Yeah, that's the trouble with having a sense of responsibility. Follows you around like a busted garter.
Well, I'll appreciate anything you can suggest, Dr. Hall. I didn't want to bother you with it, but you can imagine the kind of advice I get from my own crowd. Thank you for listening to me, sir.
Well, not at all. Good night, Mrs. Hall.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. Merriweather.
Good night.
Good night.
If all this is really true, somebody should give Penny Sherman a good spanking.
Or if you remember, Bill, at a recent board meeting, our friend Clarence Wellman had a suggestion. He said the a la carte was a disgrace and an eyesore, and was this a college campus or an amusement park, and how could we continue to tolerate such a flagrant nuisance, etc., 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 etc. I didn't hear all of it because I was busy making a paper dart and was having a little trouble with the tail assembly.
In the first place, and although Vicky's suggestion has some merit, protocol rules out the spanking. We can't give a captain's girl corporal punishment.
Oh, well, suggestion withdrawn, hairbrush back on the dressing table.
Well, can't fire the hot dog wagon off the campus either, unless we want to renege on a promise. And while I be maybe no monument to morality, I haven't welched on a bargain since the age of 5, when I traded a new jackknife for a water pistol that leaked. It cost me a black eye and 3 front teeth to learn that a deal is a deal and a handshake is a contract, even if you have to count your fingers afterwards.
Well, do I understand that Ivy College made some sort of a promise to Mr. Sherman?
Oh, Ivy College did indeed, Vicky.
Oh.
Frederick Sherman was a student here. He was at Chateau Thierry in World War I and came home in pretty bad shape. The nature of his wounds demanded outdoor work, and this college granted his request to operate a refreshment stand on the campus.
Oh, no time limit?
No, ma'am, no. At least no time limit was discussed at the time, maybe because the idea of his living another 30 years was rather fantastic. They tell me he's still got enough shell fragments in him to short out a radio.
Oh. So, how do you convince Penny that blood is thicker than mustard?
Oh, I think I shall pursue my usual policy when dealing with personality problems. I'll investigate the principal personalities. Charles, how late does Mr. Sherman keep the a la carte open?
At 10:30 on Wednesday evenings. Ah. Athletic Association meets until 10, and when they come out of Wellman Hall, they'll eat the chrome off your radiator. Why, Bill? You hungry?
I hunger for information. Would you two care to join me in a hot dog?
Not I, thank you, Tony. Yeah, I never learned to handle them without eating half the paper napkin. You know, when they start wrapping them in crepe Suzette, I'll try again.
Well, I'm tempted, Bill, but if you consider my ulcers an immovable object and hot dogs and pickle lily the irresistible force, you can see what it might do to the laws of physics, to say nothing of me. Besides, I've got to get home before my wife sues me for desertion.
Well, perhaps it's just as well that I talk to Sherman alone. I have a haunting feeling that I know the answer to this situation and can't remember it. And if I'm to meddle in undergraduate love affair... meddle.
Meddle?
Yes. Yes, indeed. I knew it. Vicky, my hat and coat, please. Never mind. I have them. I'll be back shortly, darling. Good night, Charles. Come again soon.
Yeah, well, good night, Bill.
You'll excuse me, won't you? I'll explain later. Right now, I must cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. The hot dogs of war.
Do you think I'd better follow him, ma'am? Is he all right?
Oh, I think so, Mr. Merriweather. Although, you'll have to wear his overcoat home. He took yours.
Rebroadcast presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colmes.
As we return to The Halls of Ivy, Dr. Hall has just come home from an interview with Fred Sherman, the proprietor of a hot dog wagon known on the campus as the a la carte.
You weren't gone very long, dear. Did you enjoy the hot dog?
I didn't have a hot dog, my sweet.
Well, there was a little dab of mustard on your overcoat lapel. Don't tell me you had an ice cream cone with mustard on it.
Very well.
Very well what?
I won't.
You won't what?
I tell you that I had an ice cream cone with mustard on it. In the first place, my love, it would be a falsehood. And I am one married man who finds his wife so understanding and so completely sympathetic that I deem it unnecessary to resort to prevarication. In the second place, the very thought of a mustard-topped ice cream cone is so aesthetically repugnant...
Toddy.
...so gastronomically fantastic, and so digestively frightening that I... yes, my love?
You are of age, William, and while it didn't say so specifically in our marriage vows that you could go anywhere you want and eat anything you like without having to explain to female busybodies how you got mustard on your overcoat...
I had an Ivy burger.
Oh. What did he say?
And it was not my overcoat. I discovered I was wearing Mr. Merriweather's, which I shall return to him as soon as the reek of cleaning fluid subsides to a less stupefying degree.
Yes.
Not knowing exactly whether or not spilled mustard required a more powerful solvent than faucet water, I called the campus pharmacy and was informed after due research...
Charlie!
What
did he say?
He said that mustard, being usually prepared with an oil base, would undoubtedly cause a certain amount of...
I mean Mr. Sherman. What did he say?
Oh, yes. Sherman.
Yes.
Well, after we were past the amenities, he said... And what toothsome morsel would tempt your palate, master? The succulent canine or the fragrant ivy burger? Renowned in these hallowed precincts, he said, as a broiled benediction in a brown and crusty bun.
Well, let's go back there. Now I'm hungry.
So I said that my exalted position as president of this institution and the loyalties exacted of it impelled me to order an ivy burger. And he said, certainly, master... And in what state of cremation wouldst have this delectable tidbit? Pink as a blushing dawn, he said, or charred like the soul of an unbeliever? And I said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And he said, well done it is, master. And I said...
Excuse me.
Yes, dear?
Was your entire conversation conducted on the same level of sickening whimsy?
No, dear. You turned quite prosaic after that.
Well, good. With what result?
With the result that I have asked Mr. Fred Sherman and his daughter, Penny, to be our guests in the reviewing stand tomorrow. You see, as I had half remembered, Fred Sherman in World War I was a hero of no mean stature. He's a Medal of Honor man. Which doesn't seem to impress his daughter.
A Congressional Medal of Honor? Well, isn't that the highest award that's given?
It is. It originated in the Civil War, and it's usually awarded at the order of Congress and by the President of the United States. It carries unusual prerogatives and entitles the holder to some such sum as $6 or $8 a month from a grateful government.
Oh, well, it seems a little preposterous now, but I suppose during the Civil War it went a long way towards paying the rent.
Oh, yes, and I think there's a bill about to be introduced in Congress to increase the allotment to 100 per month. But the medal itself... For valor beyond the call of duty.
Oh, Louisa's off
is...
today. Shall I answer it?
No, darling, I'll get it.
Well, that merits at least a campaign ribbon for courtesy.
Good evening, Dr. Hall. I'm Penny Sherman. I hope it's not too late.
Oh, not at all, Miss Sherman. I'm very glad to see you. Come in.
Thank you.
Victoria, this is Penny Sherman.
Hello, Mrs. Hall.
Hello, Penny. It was nice to meet you.
I'm sorry to call so late, Mrs. Hall, but Father just told me about tomorrow. I mean, about being your guest in the reviewing stand. I'm kind of stunned.
Oh, don't be stunned, Miss Sherman. Just accept it as the rightful due of the daughter of a Medal of Honor man. There's enough glamour attached to that decoration to shed quite a bit of reflected glory.
But he said you said... Well, I mean, you told him that he was to be honored at the review. Why, he's had that medal for maybe 30 years, since long before I was born.
Hmm. Old medals never die, Penny. They're just put away. And the Medal of Honor doesn't tarnish even after 30 years. We're quite apt to take our living heroes for granted. But isn't it nice to have a father who can stand with John Paul Jones and Paul Revere and Marion Francis?
Marion Francis? Who was she, Mrs. Hall?
She was a he, Miss Sherman. And it was not Marion Francis. It was Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox of Virginia.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
You'll excuse my wife's pardonable British misconceptions about the American Revolution, Miss Sherman. It is probably rooted in embarrassment.
Embarrassment? Nothing. Well, we lost that war on purpose. We knew you'd eventually run out of beaver furs and go broke.
Forgive this historical digression, Miss Sherman. The point we started from was that there is no statute of limitations on heroism. Your father has brought honor to Ivy College. Tomorrow we shall endeavor to recompense slightly for our neglect in recognition.
Yes, I understand that, Dr. Hall, but
Why me? I have no right on the reviewing stand. I'm not a hero. Though I came over tonight to thank you for the invitation.
A Medal of Honor man has certain rights, Penny. And one of them is to share his great moments with his family.
You'll be at the reviewing stand at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, Miss Sherman. You'll sit with Mrs. Hall and me, and whatever visiting gold braid they can spare from the Pentagon building. And, Miss Sherman...
Yes, Dr. Hall?
Wear your prettiest dress. You're the only girl on the campus whose father has the Congressional Medal of Honor and is living to wear it. To quote the historian Sallust, ancestral glory is, as it were, a lamp to posterity. So, you shall be a daughter lustrous in the light of her illustrious father. Captain Sherman, may I present my wife? Victoria, this is our guest of honor, Frederick Sherman.
I haven't had much practice saluting, Captain Sherman, so could I just shake hands?
Yes, if mine will stop shaking long enough for you to grab it, Mrs. Hall. And never mind the captain. I'm just Fred Sherman, the hot dog man. You just ask my daughter.
Well, if you'll notice her face right now, Mr. Sherman, I think she's beginning to realize that you have a special status of your own. Beyond that of dispensing very superior hamburgers.
She's really wide-eyed, isn't she?
Well, she ought to be, Mrs. Hall. I've been telling her for years what a great, big, wonderful hero I am. Well, maybe this will convince her the old man is at least a reputable citizen, and that I... Uh-oh. We'd better get organized, Dr. Hall. Here they come. Penny, honey, on your feet.
Gentlemen of Ivy, honored guests, this is more than a routine review of Ivy College's splendid ROTC unit. It is in the nature of a double tribute, with honors equally divided. It is my privilege to dedicate... respect and affection that we honor an Ivy alumnus who has brought glory to himself and to this college, a recipient of the highest award for valor which this nation can offer, and a man whom Ivy College has the distinction of calling one of its own. We salute Captain Frederick Sherman, Rainbow Division, holder of the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Look, Mrs. Hall, they're all saluting him, even the generals.
I know you're proud of him, Penny. But don't tell me. Tell him.
Oh, I will. I will.
Finally, by means of the memorial we dedicate today, we wish to pay reverent respect to those of our students and faculty who have given their lives in combat to uphold the ideals of freedom and dignity which they taught and learned here at Ivy. The words of Mr. Valiant for Truth in Pilgrim's Progress may also be the words of each man we honor today. My sword I give to him who shall succeed me in my pilgrimage, and my courage and skill to him that can get it. My marks and scars I carry with me to be a witness that I have fought his battles, who now shall be my rewarder. So So he passed over, and all the trumpets sounded for him on the other side.
Kurt Martell, and Jess Kirkpatrick. Tonight's script was written by Don Quinn and John DiGrazio. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is foot. F-O-O-T.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Brother, what I know about him. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx. Thank you, thank you. Well, here I am again with $2,500 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
We invited some locksmiths and some dynamite experts to the program, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected locksmith Robert Eads and dynamiter Robert Crabtree. And here they are. Gentlemen, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, boys, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you always have with you. A locksmith and a dynamiter, eh? Mr. Dynamite, Bob Crabtree, is that right?
Yes, sir, that's right.
What kind of a name is that? English?
That's right.
It's not an uncommon name, is it?
Well, not as uncommon as Marx. So.
Is this what I can expect for the next few minutes? You're the dynamite man, huh?
That's correct.
Have you got any with you?
No, we don't generally carry it with us.
That's good. At least we can count on you to stay with us for the whole show, huh? where are you from, Mr. Crabtree?
I was born in Reno, Nevada.
Well, how did you come by train, or were you blown out of town? where do you work, Mr. Crabtree?
Oh, I work for the Hercules Potter Company here in Los Angeles.
And Mr. Locksmith, what is your name? Eads? Where'd you go to school? Did you go to Yale?
I went to Fairfax.
You went to Fairfax?
Yeah.
Oh, Beatrice? Where do you work, Mr.
Downtown. Eads? I own my own business, Speedo Key Service.
Speedo Key Service? What does that mean?
That means speed and service.
Have you ever been locked out at home?
Yes, I have.
He's got a nice business, this fella, huh? Can't he get in his own house? Why? What happened?
I just lost the keys.
Now, what kind of jobs are most common in your business?
Oh,
Mr.
opening
Eads?
Cars,
opening
homes,
what?
Opening automobiles, homes, offices, changing combinations, general repairs, installations.
I change my combinations about 3 times a week, huh? I change them more often, but I have to wash them myself. If you think my combinations are washed out, you should see me around 8 o'clock in the morning. How do you change the combination of a lock?
By the rearrangement of the tumblers or the replacement.
What do you mean, tumblers? You mean they have midget acrobats inside? What are tumblers?
Tumblers are the pins that the different length pins that go to make up the combination of the lock.
TNT, that's you, Dynamite. By the way, what does TNT stand for?
Well, it stands for trinitrotoluene.
Oh. I thought it stood for tamales, knockwurst, and tortillas. That's a pretty explosive combination, too. Do you have many accidents in your profession?
Well, the average powder man only has one accident.
That's the most conclusive statement I ever heard. What would happen if you accidentally dropped a stick of dynamite?
Well, probably nothing. However, we don't recommend dropping any dynamite.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, it's made to explode, and we treat it as such.
Mm-hmm. What happens if somebody drops a stick of dynamite? Would he be fired?
He probably wouldn't be fired.
Well, you mean if you could find him?
If we could find him.
Well, I've learned a lot about locks and dynamite. Now, let's see if you two are going to be the ones who get the chance at the $2,500 question. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to play You Bet Your Life.
And now, an important bulletin from the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. Quote, here's good news for the many thousands who are waiting for a new DeSoto or a new Plymouth. The production lines at the factory are really humming, and beautiful new cars are rolling off the line. We suggest that you contact your DeSoto Plymouth dealer at your earliest convenience. End of quote. Yes, folks, that's good news to all of us. More and more people will now experience the thrill of driving a DeSoto, the car that lets you drive without shifting. So be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Now let's see if you two will get a chance at the $2,500. Fenneman, tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $2,500 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected American expressions for English words as your category, right? Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you bet?
$10.
$10. They call it a lift. What do we call it?
Elevator.
Elevator is right.
And they're on their way up with $30.
Well, you've just raised yourself to $30 here with that elevator. Remember, you're going for $2,500 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
Like a 25, Red.
25. All right, that's dynamite. Yeah, the English expression is accumulator. Accumulator. What do we call it?
Additive.
Adding machine?
No. I'm sorry. It's a tough one. It's a storage battery.
They now have $5.
Here's your third question. How much of the $5 will you bet?
$4.95.
$4.95. The English expression is tram. What is our expression?
Elevated express.
Streetcar.
Streetcar is right.
Go on the way again, Groucho. They have
$9.95. What? How much of the $9.95 are you going to bet?
$9.95.
All right. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. In England, they call it a pub. What do we call it?
A bar.
A bar is
right.
That
one. And they wind up with $19.90.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, don't go away. You may get a chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still foot.
Foot, huh? Which one, George?
It doesn't matter.
It does to me, huh?
Perhaps our next couple will say it, too. We asked for volunteers from the audience who had interesting stories. Just before we went on the air, Mr. Harold Price and Mrs. Florence Schwartz were chosen. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, youngsters. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Harold Price, eh?
That's right.
Well, I'm happy to see that you came down to the program tonight. I'm always glad to see a price come down. Harold, what sort of work do you do?
I'm a fry cook.
Fry cooks. I always thought cooks were hard-boiled, didn't you? Where do you work right now, at the Greasy Skillet?
No, well, I came out here from Buffalo, New York, and I'm going to get something pretty quick now. I'm going to get work right away.
In other words, you're unemployed, is that
Well, right? I'm unemployed.
Did you quit or did you get fired?
Well, got fired, I guess.
When will you know? Well, I hope you land something real soon, Harold. Mrs. Schwartz?
Yes, hi.
Where are you from? Are you from Florence?
I'm from New York City, the Lower East Side.
The Lower East Side.
Mm-hmm.
Fenneman says you two have had some interesting experiences. Mrs. Schwartz, what's happened to you?
Well, years ago when I went to work, I met my husband. He was a bloomer cutter.
He was a bloomer cutter, did you say? Not so fast, Mrs. Were you a bloomer girl at the time?
No, I was. I was much thinner, and these were... I had to make work for stylish stouts, and I only weighed 105 at the time.
Mrs. Schwartz, I'm an expert on double talk, but... triple talk throws me, so... Mrs. Schwartz, eh?
So he would... We'd have layers of cloth, and he'd have to cut them. I'd be slicing them. I'd have to slip them.
He was a bloomer cutter, and you were a bloomer slicer.
That's right.
And that's how you met?
And
slicing and cutting your way through the east side.
I was working on this table, and every time we'd look at each other, they'd be getting cut wrong, so we'd have to cut them a little smaller.
So anyway, what happened?
Well, anyway, the boss says that I was distracting this cutter from his work.
And I can understand that, huh?
And then I'd better look for another job. So it was during the Depression at the time, and I couldn't find a job. So he says, I think I'd better marry you. So he wouldn't start haunting me about a job.
Okay. Well, that certainly was a note of despair on his part.
That's what he says.
Tell me, Mr. Schwartz, were you modeling these things at the time?
Well, sometimes I did when they were cut short.
Well, maybe we better cut this short, huh? Harold, what's your story, huh?
Well, one day I was broke. Next day I had $27,000, and a few days later I was broke again.
Well, that's the income taxes for you, huh? What happened to the $27,000?
Gave it to a lawyer.
That sounds logical. Maybe you better go way back to the beginning and tell me everything, Harold.
Well, I was walking down the Main Street here in Los Angeles. I was broke and didn't have a room, didn't have any money. And I kicked a package, a newspaper package. When I kicked it, all these bonds and checks and securities were spread out all over the ground.
You found stocks and bonds on the sidewalk?
That's right.
It must have been curb stocks, huh? Well, what'd you do next, huh?
Well, I looked at them and I realized that they were pretty valuable, and I turned them over and I saw that they'd been signed and that they were negotiable and...
You mean you could actually turn these into cash?
That's right. That's what they told me.
Who told you that?
Oh, everybody told me. Even a bootblack, even a shoeshine boy.
You usually take financial advice from a bootblack? You should have come to me immediately, huh? Now, after you talked it over with the bootblack, did he take a shine to you when he found out you had... After you realized the socks were so valuable, what did you do with them, Harold?
Well, I borrowed a dime from a fella I knew, and I headed for the bus station.
Now you're talking, huh? How far did you expect to get on a dime?
Well, not very far. I took the dime and I put them, checked them in one of these check locker boxes for it.
It's a good thing that key man wasn't around, huh? Well, that was an ingenious hideout. Then what did you do, huh?
Well, I tried to locate the people that had them. There was a name on them.
Yeah, so?
Didn't have any money. So I went to a blood bank, sold a pint of blood, got $4 for it, and I started phoning everybody in the phone book by the name of the owners of the stocks and bonds.
And?
Well, I couldn't locate them, so I took them to the Los Angeles Times in the hope that the newspaper would find the owners for them.
Well, you're a very honest man, huh? Harold, if everybody in the world was as honest as you, there probably wouldn't be very many people with $27,000. When the owner of the stocks was identified, did you get a big reward, Harold?
Well, I got this suit here, $50 suit and $25 in cash.
What else did you get?
Well, I had a lot of other interesting things happen to me. I had quite a few offers for jobs. One woman called up and said she was 28 years old and considered quite pretty, and that I looked a lot like her ex-husband. She thought I was cute and that he was a rat. She said she'd like to have an honest husband.
Well, you'd have been provided with cheese anyhow. Well, what are your plans for the future? Which of the jobs are you going to take, Harold?
Well, I'm going to take whichever one has the most security and the most promising future, whatever it is.
Well, you better marry the girl whose husband was a rat. Well, it's been refreshing talking to you, talking to an honest man. I rarely encounter one. Now, let's see how well you two can make out in the battle for the $2,500. You're going to play your bet your life. You run your $20 and the more than the other couples, and you'll get a chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The locksmith and the dynamiter won $19.90.
Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected stars of current movies as your category. Is that correct?
That's right.
Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you risk?
$10.
$10. Who's the male lead in Chain Lightning?
Humphrey Bogart.
Humphrey Bogart.
Well, we'll get started with $30, Groucho.
Remember, you're going for $2,500 tonight. Now you have $30. How much are you going to try?
$15.
Who is the leading man in Francis?
What's his name there? Donald O'Connor.
Donald O'Connor. Donald O'Connor is right.
They're climbing. We have $45.
Fooled me. I just said the jackass, huh? All right, you got $45. Now, here's your third question. How much are the 45?
That's 30.
Who plays the lead in Willie Comes Marching Home?
Tap dancer. What's
his... Dan Daly.
Dan Daly is right.
Now they have $75.
Okay, now you got $75. Now, how much are you going to bet? Now, talk it over, kids.
Bet 50, I'd say. Bet it all.
Who plays the young man with a horn?
Young man with a horn. Wait a minute.
Kirk Douglas.
Thank you. A grand total of $150.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And I will soon know who gets the chance at the $2,500 question.
What would you do, friends, if you were to get up some morning and find your car won't start?
I'd get back in bed, Fenneman.
Well, smart folks would call out their DeSoto Plymouth dealer because he'd send the man over to fix up your car and get you back on the road.
In my pajamas, huh? I'll thank him to let me alone.
Well, Groucho,
most folks will thank their DeSoto Plymouth dealer for the kind of fast, courteous treatment he's willing and ready to give.
All right, Fenneman, I'll thank you to tell us who's leading in the battle for the $2,500 question.
Well, the honest man and the housewife are ahead with $150, and the secret word is still foot. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a perfume salesgirl and a county fair official, and here they are, Miss Libby Kohler and Mr. Tex Condon, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers, folks. And if you say the secret word, you'll split $100 between you. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Miss Libby Kohler?
Kohler.
Kohler. You're the perfume sales girl, eh?
That's right.
Where are you from, Cologne?
No, Reading, Pennsylvania.
Where?
Reading, Pennsylvania.
Oh, pretzel bender, eh? How long have you been selling perfume?
Oh, about 10 years.
Well, you add a very fragrant note to our program. Mr. Condon?
Yes, sir.
And where are you from? All of you, I mean. Huh?
Originally from Texas. I'm now living...
This lady in the front row knew it because she used to be a panhandler. We insult anybody around here. We don't. Unfortunately, we mean it. Now, where are you? You're from Texas, eh?
Originally, but I live in California now.
Well, that's quite an admission for a Texan to make.
I'm a displaced Texan.
Are you married, Tex?
Yes, sir.
How many children do you have, sir?
I have three.
Three, huh?
Yes, sir.
Are they all as big as you?
No, two of them, they're all girls. Two of them are 5'8" and 5'9". One of them's only 5'7½".
She's probably from Oklahoma, huh? Miss Kohler, are you married?
No, sir.
You sell perfume? You haven't trapped anybody yet, huh? What kind of perfume do you sell? Repulsive number 5? I always get a kick out of the names you people choose for your products. What are some of the scents you sell?
Well, voodoo, taboo, shocking, white shoulders.
What does white shoulders do for a woman?
Well, it's not so much what it does for the woman, it's what it does to the man.
What do you do at county fairs, Mr. Condon?
I judge livestock.
Judge, I'll be big about this thing. The air is all yours, huh? Well, let's see how good you are. Let me hear you judge me. Go ahead and be sure to notice all my fine points.
Well, what are you? I mean...
If I have to answer that, the whole thing is off, huh? I'm a Brahma, Judge. Any fool can see I'm not a Holstein. Do you judge Brahmas?
Oh, yes. I just...
You're a Brahma critic, in other
yes,
words.
Yes, indeed. We handle a lot of them. And,
I say, you're a Brahma critic?
Yes, sir, a Brahma
critic. Who do you work for, the Daily Moose? All right, go ahead and judge me, huh?
Generally speaking, you have all the fine points of an outstanding animal. You have a very well-shaped head. You have
For good... what?
Well, for a good Brahma. You have fair shoulders, but I'd say they could be a little thicker, a little fuller, your shoulders.
Well, my head makes up for that. Well, how do you judge cattle? What do you look for in a cow?
General conformation, quality, and showmanship.
I never heard of a cow with showmanship, huh? Is that when a cow is a good hoofer?
No, not exactly.
How much does a prize cow bring?
These top cows, good cows, bring anywhere from, $12,000 to $20,000.
A cow is worth $20,000?
Oh, yes.
Gee, you wouldn't think a cow would be smart enough to save all that money. She probably made it in a bull market, huh? How much is a bull worth, huh? Not a wool worth, but a bull worth, huh?
Oh, good. Real top outstanding bull sold for $65,000 this year.
A bull is worth $45,000 more than a cow?
Oh, yes.
I hope you girls all listen to that out. Well, I've always said it was a man's world. How much does a prize bull weigh, Judge?
Good bull weigh from 1,600 to 1,800 pounds.
How much does that come to a pound for a $65,000 job?
Well, don't figure them by pound. You don't eat those bulls.
What do you do with a bull? Put in a jewelry store window? Suppose I did eat it.
Well, if you did eat it, let's see. It'd figure around $150 a pound. Well,
that's just what the Beverly Hills Butcher charges. Well, you've both been very interesting and very nice people. Now, let's see if you'll beat the other two couples and get the chance at the $2,500 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much the other two couples won, but Fenneman is going to remind our listeners.
The honest man and the housewife are ahead with $150.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You select the cities of the world as your category. Is that right? All of these cities are over 300,000 in population. Now, you have $20. How much you want to try?
$10.
Are you an auctioneer at times, too, Judge?
Yes, sir, I am.
In what country is the city of Genoa?
Italy.
Italy is right, huh?
Well, let's start with $30, Groucho.
All right, now you got $30. How much of the 30 will you try?
25.
In what country is the city of Baku, or Baku, B-A-K-U?
India.
Do you agree with that?
No.
I'm sorry, the Hemingway is told back here. It's Russia.
They now have $5, Groucho.
All right, here's your third question. You're down to $5. Now, how much will you bet?
$3.
$3, huh? In what country is the city of Helsinki?
Norway.
No, you're close, Judge, but not close enough. It's Finland.
They now have $2.
Well, now you're down to $2, huh? Now, you can put it on the third race, or you can bet it here, whatever you want.
Well, we bet $1.
You're going to bet $1. In what country is the city of Valencia?
Spain.
Spain is right, huh? All right, you're practically cleaned out. We want you to go away from here a little better off than when you came in. Now, if you get this one right, you'll be $10 richer. After what state is the Mississippi River named?
Mississippi.
Mississippi is right.
This couple winds up with a grand total of $3. And that means the honest man and the housewife with $150 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $2,500 question. To get the most mileage from your car, you'll find it will pay you to take it for service to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's. For that's where you get the benefit of factory-designed and approved tools and equipment, and skilled factory-trained mechanics who know how to use this equipment to do an expert job on your car in shorter time. To you, this means a saving of money and a car that will give you faithful, economical service mile after mile. So next time your car needs service, no matter what make of car it is, take it to an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here's the honest man and the housewife, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $2,500 question,
all
Groucho.
Right. Here we go for $2,500. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully, and please no help from the audience. Here it is. The Comstock Lode is one of the richest deposits of gold and silver in history. Many present-day fortunes were started in the mines of the Comstock Lode. For $2,500, tell me, in what state is it located?
Oh,
answer you decided upon. Nevada is right. Well, you had the right answer, so you win $2,500. What are you going to do with all that money?
Well, I think open up a little hot dog stand or something, a little small
restaurant.
Good,
good. And Mrs. Schwartz.
Gee, I don't know. I only know I thank you very much.
Well, let's see. You won $2,500 plus $150 in the quiz. You really cleaned up tonight. Congratulations from the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast. You bet your life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week the big question will be worth $1,000.
By the way, folks, I want to warn you that I'll be on the cover of Quick Magazine that's out tomorrow. I suggest all dogs be kept on leash and small children be locked indoors. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. When driving, showing off doesn't pay. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Radio production.